The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Well, now we want to go back in time and a piece of audio, rare audio, taken from the arms trial in 1970, when one of the key witnesses in that arms trial, and indeed one of the accused, Captain James Kelly, was being cross-examined. Have a listen to this.
You meant, I suggest, when you made that telephone call, this and this only, that Mr. Haughey would be asked for the final okay.
Well, this is what I assumed, that he would ask Mr. Haughey.
Not ask me to assume anything. I asked you, was that what you meant?
Oh, yes, I meant him to go ask Mr. Haughey. I asked for instructions, and I said, ask the boss man, which was Mr. Haughey.
Ask Mr. Haughey. Well, that's a recording from the arms trial, not really in the public domain until fairly recently, because they were trialing the idea of recording witnesses instead of using the stenographers. So that record is there. Even the greatest political scandals have a lifespan, normally, and people get on with their lives shortly thereafter. But for others, their worlds are permanently changed. And my next guest was just 5 years old at the time of the arms crisis. He was born in 1965. These trials happened, there were two, in 1970. And for him, family life was changed forever, but as he tells it, not necessarily always for the worse. And as it happens, he features in a new documentary called Once We Were Punks, which is in cinemas now. Justin Kelly, son of James Kelly, good morning and welcome.
How are you, Pat?
I knew about the movie. I did not know the connection until fairly recently, that you were your father's son. How heavily did that weigh on your childhood?
It weighed very heavily on our childhood. It completely changed the trajectory of the family life. My father was a career soldier. He joined the army when he was a teenager, and the arms trial happened when he was 40 years old. So he was still a young man, but he'd spent 20 years as a serving soldier. And his career was abruptly ended by the arms trial, and his reputation was
through,
severely damaged.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the arms trial for the sake of younger listeners, and you wouldn't even need to be that young not to know about the arms trial, because it happened in the importation of arms, the attempted importation in 1969, the trial in 1970. What was actually going on?
Well, really, it was a government plan to bring these guns in the case of a sort of a doomsday situation with the people in the north who were under siege. And I think the government were approached by these Catholic defense organizations who came down, and they met with senior members of the government. And my father was in military intelligence, and he was charged with purchasing these guns.
And now you mean he was instructed to charged has another meaning, of course.
Well, yes.
Which will come later.
Instructed to purchase these guns, and he went off to Europe, and there were all sorts of negotiations. And
they tried to buy in the States, they tried to buy in Britain, and I think your dad suspected that one of the British trying to flog him arms was a spook.
That's right. He wrote about that in his book, that there was a British intelligence got involved. So it's kind of comical in a way.
Yeah. They went to America, and that the shortage of cash there for what the Americans were looking for. So then they fixed on Germany.
Yeah, they subsequently worked with a guy called Otto Schluter, and they purchased the guns. And everything was signed off on, and the money was paid over. And at a certain point, there was a change in government policy, and the government denied that this was a sanctioned operation.
Now, the ministers involved, there were, I suppose, four people you could implicate, the Taoiseach at the time, Jack Lynch, Charlie Haughey, Neil Blaney, and Jim Gibbons, who was the Minister for Defence, into whose custody these arms would go.
Yes, and the operation was sanctioned by the Department of Defense, which made it, that was the authority that would make this a legal operation. And when the Department of Defense decided that they did not want to take responsibility and denied their role, it made it a crime. Because as long as the Department of Defense were in charge, this was a legally sanctioned operation.
Yeah.
On behalf of the government.
Now, one of the wrinkles in all of this is that the head of intelligence actually, it appears, sent a memo to the Taoiseach indicating what was going on. So the Taoiseach was made aware of this. And then subsequently, that document was doctored.
Well, the head of Army Intelligence, my father's supervisor, was a man called Colonel Michael Heffernan. And when the arms trial kicked off, originally Colonel Heffernan was part of the prosecution.
Yeah.
And Colonel Heffernan, when he found out what was going on and what the government plan was very upset. And I think there's a story about him going over to pray in the, he was obviously a devout man. He went over to the Capuchin church there on Church Street and prayed for guidance. And he was a very honest man and he told the truth. And he told the truth to an extent that he was, for the second trial, he was dropped as a witness for the prosecution because his evidence directly implicated the Department of Defense. It subsequently came out that his evidence was, I don't like to use the word doctored, but I would say altered to take away its very meaning.
Edited, yeah.
Edited. And it was to take away the very meaning because his statement referred to the Department of Defense, which made this a legal operation. And by removing that line, suddenly
it becomes
this become a nefarious operation.
In the event the trials collapsed, there was no conviction in the first one collapsed, second trial, no convictions. They were freed.
They were found not guilty. That's correct.
Now, the implications for your father, because he should have been a free man without a stain on his character following an acquittal, but he'd already resigned from the army in advance. Why?
He resigned from the army because it gave him a chance to actually speak. When you're in the army, there's rules, and he was disappointed and he knew he had to speak up. And I think that was probably took the government a bit by surprise. Because I think they thought he would roll over and he would play ball and he couldn't stand over what was going on.
Now, you believe he was scapegoated subsequently, you know, that the stain remained on his character but not on the others.
Well, I think it remained on everybody, but I think my father was certainly, there was a whispering campaign. There was a talk of the jury had been gotten at, which is absolute nonsense. And there was a sort of a general idea that there was no smoke without fire. So he was very much a persona non grata at that time. And so in 1970, after he left the army, he had to find a job. And he was a very capable man. He was a writer as well as being a soldier. And in fact, he managed he edited the army magazine on Cusinthor. And he would apply for jobs and he just wouldn't get them. And he wrote a book about the arms trial, which is probably the definitive document about the arms trial, Orders for the Captain in 1970. It's certainly the only document written by somebody who was actually there.
Yeah.
And he, at one point, he had, there was a British publishing company, quite a well-known British publishing company, who were ready to publish it. And they were talked to and told this wouldn't be a good idea. And so he ended up publishing it himself. And
did it do well?
It did very well. I believe it was what they would call a bestseller in 1970, whatever that was. But you have to remember that when you self-publish and you've got no money, that you sell out the first run and then you're stuck. There's nothing there. Yeah.
Now, subsequently, there was another book written by Michael Heaney of Primetime fame, which vindicated your father completely.
Yes, well, what happened, I suppose the backstory to the Michael Heaney book was 30 years after the arms trial, my father went down to the Office of Public Records, I think it's in Molesworth Street or something, when the records were released from the arms trial. And to his delight, I suppose, he very quickly found the altered statement of Colonel Heffernan. And that began a conversation and it reignited his interest because, you know, we'd gone on with our lives and he'd gone on with his life. And I think he spoke with Michael in some capacity, I'm not actually sure. And Michael sort of took this on and he created this Primetime documentary that was quite explosive.
Yeah, and Michael would be like a dog with a bone. I know him well.
Oh, yes, so yes.
He would get to the bottom of things. Your father was hopeful of an apology from the state. It didn't come. He got a statement from Bertie Ahern before he died. Was it the day before he died or the day after he died?
I believe it was the day before he died. And there was a statement from Mr. Ahern that was quite conciliatory, but it was ambiguous. And that just didn't sit right. I think, to paraphrase, he said something like, well, Captain Kelly was an honourable man who thought that he was doing right, which was is not the case. Captain Kelly was an honourable man who did the right thing. He didn't think he did the right thing. There's no doubt.
Now, your father was consumed with the idea that the state should and would give him that apology. It never came, but your sister told a little fib.
Yes, when my father was dying, he was, as the family would go in to visit him, he would, this arms trial thing was in the news a lot. And my father would say, have they issued an apology? Have they issued an apology? And the day before he died, or maybe it was the day he died, my sister Suzanne, who's my eldest sister, she would have been about 13 at the time of the arms trial. And sort of to appease him and out of kindness, she said, yes, they've done something. And he died very soon afterwards.
All right. In the belief that he had been apologized to, which he was not.
Well, yes, you could.
Yeah. Now, for you as a family, the whole arms trial saga ended up with you having being very disrupted. In fact, you had to move.
Yes, well, it really turned our lives upside down. And as I said, my father was a career soldier, and suddenly he was unemployed and unemployable because of, you know, this whispering campaign that continued to go on, and in many ways still goes on with certain sections of society. So we lived in Terranure at the time. We were sort of middle class, very happy, and we were penniless. So we lived like that for a couple of years. And I remember this would have been about 1976 that we sold the house. I think it was £19,000 in Terranure. Yeah. And we bought a pub in Ballybor in County Cavan for £22,000.
Okay.
So we suddenly had a way to make money. And the pub, funnily enough, had been owned by my father's father. So
my
father had grown up there.
So a full circle thing.
Yes.
And did your father run the pub successfully?
Yes, the pub was great. In 1976, Ballybor was quite a happening town. There was a lot of industry, and there were 32 pubs in the town, of which we were one.
Okay.
And it was very successful. So we all ran the pub. So when they say, did my father run it? My mother ran it. I ran it as a child. It was a 24/7.
And did you feel that you were five when the trial happened, but as you were growing up, did that weigh upon you at all, or were you just a kid going about your business?
No, it certainly weighed on me. And I was five at the time of the arms trial, so my memories of the time are somewhat hazy. I remember more distinctly the post-arms trial. I remember the poverty that we endured. And I remember there was an anger, I suppose, within me that my father had been wronged, and had been wronged by the state, the state's job is to keep you safe.
Yeah.
And to see that the state at the highest level would do this awful deed where, for political expediency, they were willing to put my father in prison for a long, long time. And it wasn't a mistake or they thought he'd done something. This was a plan. And it does leave you somewhat disaffected, and it erodes your faith and authority.
Did that make you into the rebellious young punk that you became?
Well, there was probably a confluence of things. Yeah. I sort of came of it when we moved to Ballybor. That was 1976. And you may remember 1976 was the birth of the Sex Pistols and the Clash and everything else. And I suppose with my anger and with my sort of outsider status that I might have felt, punk rock was ready-made for me.
Okay, how successful? What did you call your band, by the way?
Originally, we were in a band called the Panic Merchants, and before you ask, we were not successful at all.
Okay, how did the reunion come about? Because you are making music currently.
Yes, my mother died in 2009, and I met up with David, the guitarist from the Panic Merchants, and Noel Larkin, the drummer, at my mother's funeral. And post-funeral, we wanted to get away. And we went down to David's house in Clare. And he still had the guitars and he still had a little shrine to everything that we'd done. And we ended up playing music again. And it was really good. It really flowed. And I started to write lyrics about my upbringing and living in Bailaborough and characters that were there. And, you know, the Arms Trial features somewhat sure. too. And it was just so much fun. And we put out an album and we didn't expect anything. We were just doing it for fun. And lo and behold, we began to get a bit of attention.
All right. Not punk music anymore, or was it? Is it?
I would say it's more punk in attitude than in. There's no mohawks or leather jackets and okay. shouting.
And then Tom Dunn plays a track on his show on this station.
That's right. I got a call out of the blue. We had a website, which we no longer have. And I got a call from a fellow called Frank Sheldice, who had never met. And it was actually an email. And he said, I'm a filmmaker in Dublin. I heard your song on the Tom Dunn show. I really liked it. I liked the lyrics. I liked the vibe of it. Would you be interested in talking? And we talked on the phone then, and we talked for about 2 hours. And that was the genesis of the film.
Which is called Once We Were Punks.
Once We Were Punks.
And it's got a cinema release.
It's been released across the country. It's on all this week at the IFI in Dublin, the Irish Film Institute. It's had releases in Cavan, Galway, Cork, I'm probably forgetting, Castlebar, and other places.
Other places,
can't
okay.
remember at the moment.
Wherever good movies are shown.
Absolutely.
That's where you'll find it. Once We Were Punks is called. And I hope that our conversation this morning will kind of inform the viewing of the movie for everyone who goes to see it.
Absolutely.
Great stuff. Justin, thank you very much for joining us in studio. And that's Justin Kelly, who is the son of the late Captain James Kelly, who featured so largely in the Arms Trial and whose family are still waiting a formal state apology.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.